Hi, hello, and welcome to the Sarah Explains It All podcast. I am Sarah, your host. I am a femtech enthusiast. I am super passionate about all things women's health. I love breaking down the taboos, the myths. I love talking about the good, the bad, the ugly, all of it. And I thought, what better way to talk about women's health and femtech world in this latest series of the podcast than to bring on the biggest, the best, the brightest in the femtech founder world. So, pull up a chair, grab a cup of tea, hit play, and let's get started. I am so excited. I would say that Natalie's company's product is what got me into, or was my first foray into femtech products. Natalie, thank you so much for joining me today. How are you?
Thank you for having me. I'm doing good.
Fantastic.
And curious to hear why you or how you came up and saw Daisy.
Yeah, so I think I was gifted a Daisy actually by there's an American woman that works in Germany, and she and I had connected over on Instagram, and I'm absolutely drawing a blank of her name.
Chandra.
Yes, she's amazing. And she reached out to me and I was like, oh my gosh, yes. And I have to say, I wasn't using Daisy for, so Daisy, for those of you who don't know, is a basal body thermometer. So a lot of women will use it for family planning. So to either get pregnant or avoid pregnancy. I wasn't using it for that. I was using it for the data. And it has proven so useful as I've journeyed from sort of menstruating into my perimenopausal phase. It's brilliant. I have a Tina for my 11 and a half year old daughter. I think the products are fantastic.
Oh God, that is so nice to hear.
Yeah, that's
great.
Love it.
Yeah.
So can you tell me a little bit about the business? So I've seen a little bit about how the business or the Daisy got started, but can you give us a bit of a background?
Yes. So The Valley is an international technology company which produces medtech products for fertility tracking and menstrual health. And we have three products in our portfolio, the Ladycomb, the Daisy, and the Tina. And our products are for women and anyone with a cycle and serve the different life stages from teen years to menopause. And we are actually a family-run company, which was founded in 1986, so already a long time ago, by my father. And we are based in Switzerland. And I actually entered the company in 2008 and took over in 2014 when I introduced Daisy.
Yeah, I think I've had my Daisy for a number of years now, and it honestly has, as I said, changed my life. So was Daisy your thought, child?
Yes.
Did create Daisy?
Yeah, so my father, when I entered 2008, he was located in Germany, and he shipped me to Switzerland and said, okay, you have to train now there from everything from customer support to product development, etc. And then I decided to go to the States in 2009 and open up the Vela Electronics LLC over there to distribute the Ladycomb. And there I was just living and realizing, okay, I think our devices need an app. And that's when the whole idea came about Daisy. And then I just didn't have the network and all the know-how in the US market, like to produce these devices. So I came back to Switzerland to produce them there. And I went to Switzerland and created the Daisy, and it was launched March 2014. And now in the meantime, we have a second Daisy, which has like a little different with Bluetooth and things like that. But that's kind of my entry into this whole world came by my father, and then in 2008, and how it came.
And it's such a long standing company, right? Like 1986 to now 2023, and to still be as popular as you are. Like, I think you are very popular, at least in my world you are. So can you tell me how you came up with the name Daisy? and yes. Tina, because you've got Tina as well. So how did you come up with those names?
Well, Daisy is actually from daily synchronization. It's not, it's not from the flower Daisy. It's
okay,
from,
yeah.
It's from daily synchronization because that's what we do, right? We daily we synchronize with Daisy. We measure under the tongue, and then it tells you what's going on. And then you synchronize to an app, and then you are also synchronized because you see your data there and you know what's going on. So that's the name for Daisy. And Tina actually comes from teenager.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I like it. But it's so simple, right? And their names, I think sometimes we want to be very innovative and, you know, different with our names and the things that we, our products and that sort of thing. But actually sometimes simple is better. And I remember that, like, I will now be able to be like, to my daughter, your Tina is because it's named that because it's based on teenager, and she'll find that really interesting. And you know, I think sometimes simple is better.
yeah, it's so interesting that you have a daughter and she's using Tina. That makes me so happy.
Yeah. Well, I think for me, I remember one of the biggest challenges I had as a preteen and starting my cycle was never knowing. I very much like to control things. I want to know when stuff is happening. And that the sort of uncertainty of it, because that, you know, teenage periods are very uncertain because of your hormones and things like that. So to have the Tina, to have that as sort of a data backed science for her to learn about her body and to learn about her hormones, I thought, why not? It's amazing. It's a fantastic product. And it gives her that education that I wish I would have had at her age. You know, so
that's exactly why we created her, because I, even growing up with my father, who was, you know, in NFP, natural family planning and all that, and digitalized that, I did not grow up learning about these things because he was a man, you know, he's a guy. He didn't talk with us daughters about menstruation and stuff. He just didn't. And when I was young, it just happened, right? And I had no idea what to do. And then it was there. And I was like, oh my God, like I want teenagers to be empowered to know what's going on in their bodies and to understand puberty and periods and hormones and all that. It belongs to us and it makes us genius.
Yeah. And I think as well, it's providing us with that knowledge, something that women across the world and across the board have been denied. We aren't educated on how our bodies function. We aren't educated to know that our hormones will vary day to day. We only ever come to understanding or even trying to understand if we have infertility or painful periods or PCOS or endometriosis or something like that. That is the only time when something's bad that we try to figure out why. If it's normal or what we deem is okay, you just leave it and you never understand. And so I think starting out, and the amount of women that I've coached that have said to me, if I had the knowledge I have now when I started my period, my entire menstruation journey would have been different.
Yeah.
And that the Tina is providing that difference for young girls. And I just think that it is so amazing.
Yeah.
Now, this question's a little bit different because you are an established med tech / film tech company. But when you created Daisy, how did your business plan go? Were you able to follow them pretty easily, or did you have setbacks, or how did that work with like manufacturing, the, you know, all of that sort of stuff?
Yeah. Well, when I entered in 2008, the market was already thinking about products like that, right? Like when my father entered in 1986, everyone was, oh my God, what is he doing? Is that, that's crazy, right? Like what the hell? And so I had it a little bit easier. And when Daisy came, there was already a wish, you know, for users to access these devices. Mm-hmm. So for us, yes, overall, I can say we did, yeah? And we started small. We first launched in the Swiss market. Then we expanded into other markets. So Germany came, then the US came, and then the rest of Europe. Now we are in South America, Australia, Israel, Canada. But, you know, we grow market by market slowly. because we are also, we have never been funded. So we didn't have like millions and millions of money. We did it step by step. And with the growth, what I can say is that we are from 2014, when we launched with the Daisy, our average annual growth rate is like throughout the years, 40%. So we grew pretty fast. Mm-hmm. We were able to achieve our first 5-year plan and long-term goals in 3 years instead of 5. So, and now the next 5-year plan we just had, we also reached. But since 2022, in general, yeah, the purchasing power went lower. And that, of course, we feel as well. So our growth rate is not as big anymore right now in these times of turbulences, I would say.
Yeah. You're still growing. Now, you said that you've never been funded. I imagine that partially that came from not having access to funds in 1986. But would you ever choose to be funded, or are you happy going, being self-funded, I suppose you could call yourself?
Yeah. So the thing is, we are a pretty traditional family company, right? And so it was always the decision to make it ourselves for the moment being, right? Like we wanted to achieve it with our own powers, with our own resources. And that's what we did. I think when we look into the future, there will definitely be a discussion about it, because to really make it accessible for everyone, to do it yourself with your own power, it's difficult and it takes longer. So we will see. Right now, we are not actively looking, right? But that time might change.
Yeah. And I think hopefully, as what we're discovering with the FinTech world, is that there will be a lot more opportunity for you to access funding, and it won't be as difficult as it has been in the past, because more and more FinTech companies, or MedTech or health tech or whatever you want to call it, are becoming more prevalent in our society and in our world. So on that note, how would you define FinTech?
So FemTech stands for female technology.
Yeah.
So that's how it is. And it refers to technology and female health solutions that focus on the unique health and wellness needs for women. And it includes all sorts of stuff, right? Like wearables, mobile application, digital platforms, and all that things. And there is some discussion going on if the term is, let's say, adequate for the future.
Mm-hmm.
But I personally like the term, right? Like Ida Tin created it or came up with it in 2016, and when I first heard it, I was like, oh my god, finally there's a term, right?
Yeah.
It was like, because when I tried to explain what we were doing prior, we had to, you know, we needed all sorts of creativity to come up with, right? Like, I mean, fertility trackers came later too. At the beginning, we were natural family planning computers, you know, or fertility computers and things like that. So I was happy to have that term. I mean, in Germany, it's still not used that much.
Mm.
So there we still say cycle computers and things like that to explain what we do. But for the international community, it makes things way easier. But we will see, right? Like, I think, there are limitations to it and there are advantages to the term.
Yeah, and I completely agree. I mean, I think it gives you a good catch-all phrase for what a lot of these companies are trying to do and trying to produce. But it is also limiting in a way as well, because if you are only talking about the technology behind it, then does that mean you need an app? Do you need a device? Do you need, so it does, like,
yeah,
it will be an ever evolving term, I think. And you're not the first person or member of the FinTech community to mention the wonderfulness of it, but also the limitations as well. And it's just a phenomenal or a wonderful time, I guess, to be involved in FinTech. So you've been involved in it in quite a long time, you know, in the scheme of business. What excites you most about the FinTech space? What have you seen as the biggest change in the FinTech space?
Well, so that finally something makes women a priority, right? Like, this is my whole excitement. I mean, it's all about women. And yeah. And I love it. Yeah. So that is the most exciting thing. But, you know, it's also tackling healthcare inequalities, right? It's shortening time for diseases and diagnosis and things like that. It makes healthcare minimally invasive because you can do it from home. It's more practical and it is more personalized, and the whole education part about it too is empowering, right? We are learning finally so much about us, our health, our body, and it's getting educated and shown through whatever. So that is really empowering. And then, and then you have the research aspect. We are actually finally researching on women's health and their bodies. I mean, that is awesome. And when you think about it, it's 2023 and we can still say that research is important. You are like, oh my God, how could this even happen? But we have been historically underrepresented and undeserved. So, I mean, this is exciting. That's my most exciting part in the space. And the other question was the challenges, right?
Yeah, so the challenges, but also because you've been in the space for so long, what has been the biggest change? And it could be actually what excites you the most, the fact that we are actually working towards lessening that data gap. You know, that to me is a huge change in the world of women's health.
Yeah, I mean, it is. The biggest change came, I think, around 2014 and 2016, when this whole topic became kind of mainstream, right? Like, this brought the whole change. Prior, you had to really, oh my God, explain and barely anyone got it. And now I think the whole world sees that this is a need we have to serve. And this is bringing the change, and so many new companies are coming in. You know, like, I think it's around 1,800 femtech companies now. When back then there was three. So I think this is amazing for us as women, and it will change our world, and it's already changing our whole healthcare system and all that. So that's what I think is the best. I mean, when it comes to challenges, it always depends, right? Like, when you look from a business perspective or from the business side, I think the biggest challenge is to have capital, what we talked about, to make it big, right? And I think for those who have been funded so far, it's right now just super difficult, right? To get more money, it's more expensive. Everything is getting more expensive, so that's a big challenge. And I think it's all good as long as you grow, right? And the market demands it. So, but you still have to have, the money to and not get into a cash shortage or whatnot. So this is the main business challenge, I would say, the whole capital. And we have seen a decrease in money spent to femtechs in the this year. So we will see how that will evolve in the future, because there are a lot of companies who are in actually need of capital, and if investors are not giving you the money, then they might go dead, and that is of course a step backwards instead of a step forward. So that is what I'm seeing right now as a little bit of a threat with a lot of femtech companies out there right now.
And I think it's super important for the femtech companies to keep educating women about how important their health is and how important it is for them to understand their bodies and to have that knowledge and to lessen that data gap. Because I think women in general will always struggle to purchase things to help them. They will purchase things for everyone else in their family, but they find a tricky, you know, and they don't feel that they deserve it. And I think FinTech companies are doing a great job at showcasing to women why they deserve to understand their bodies and to solve their painful periods or their infertility or their endometriosis or whatever it is that they are struggling with. And that is a great thing. But as you say, the funding, because FemTech is still relatively new, I guess you could say, you don't have the data to back you when you say that you want funding, because we're such small companies, or we're new companies, so we've not made it as big as we could be, or as big as we will be, because we've not got that funding behind us to be able to do that. But we don't have the funding behind us because we've not done it, if you see what I mean.
Yeah. And the other part is, you know, there were like 2015, 16, when the big like the apps came out and stuff, who actually did this job, right? They are educating. They're educating. Mm. They're helping so many women to be educated on all that. But they gave away a lot of education for free, right?
Yes.
And now the problem is, okay, everyone is expecting this education for free. And that is also a challenge for the business then, because how can you survive, right? If you're giving everything for free, and if not, insurance companies, etc., pay for your services, right? So that is just, where the whole business model has to be reinvented a little bit, right?
And I think people, and in my experience as a period and a life coach, I think women in particular will only, again, because they feel like they're not worthy, will gobble up all of the free information, but really struggle with paying for anything or paying a lot for anything.
Yes.
So you're right. I do think that the business model, whilst education still needs to be at the forefront, it does need to be re-envisioned, I suppose, is a good way to think about it.
Maybe re-envisioned.
So go on.
No, and then of course, it's still in a lot of parts topics which are hard to discuss, right? So that is another challenge.
Having that conversation and talking about the things that make women blush or whatever it is really important, because the more you talk about things, the less taboo they are.
Totally. I mean, the most surprising thing was, which I actually never thought about, but I think when it was discussed last year, I think, or was it even this year, that for all the menstrual products, we never used real blood, right? Or never showed.
No, that was this year.
This year, right? And I'm like, oh my Jesus Christ, that's so right. And it's this year, right? So, and it is still difficult to show real blood. Like, you were getting flagged. If you show real blood, like anywhere, you get flagged. And if you don't show real blood, it's also wrong, right? So it's wakening up.
What do you do?
What do you do?
That was in September, I think, or even I'm pretty sure that was in September. And I remember growing up with Always, because I'm from America, so Always was a huge period product, and probably still is a huge period company. Yeah. But they always used blue water.
Yes, they use blue water. Like, because it's taboo to show period blood. How dare you, right?
You know, the biggest disappointment, I suppose, or the biggest discouragement for women from my point of view anyway, is that I've been buying these products. Yes, okay, maybe you used blue water on a television commercial, but I thought that you had been properly testing these products in the lab, and you haven't. So how could you tell me that this is going to hold X amount of mils of blood when the water that you're holding is not the same viscosity, and it's not the same thickness? And it just, it blew my mind. I mean, you just shake your head, I think.
Yeah, it's how it is.
So the market in 5 years, where do you see market growth? Do you see more mergers? Do you see greater investment? So, like, in your mind, where do you see this market in 5 years?
Yeah, that was a question I thought about a long time, actually, because right now it's so unsettled, right? Like, everything is so bubbly, and you can't really see clearly through the forest, or what, how you say it. So, I mean, the market has grown insanely in the last 9 years. Like, it has seriously exploded, especially in 2021, like, boom. But I think right now, so what will happen right now or in the next couple of years, I think the few who have the quality and highly innovative products, they will dominate the market. That's what I think. And there's a lot out there right now, right? So I think it's the time to separate the wheat from the chaff. So I think that we will see things also leave the market. I think it will, it will just clean itself in some way or the other. Not that that is good, but because of less capital and things like that, that I think that that can easily happen.
It could just be in mergers, right? So the companies don't have to just go away. They could be bought up by the bigger ones, right?
I thought about that as well. I thought, okay, what would this look like, right? And I think right now there are still a lot of what I think in the business world you would call smaller femtech companies, right?
Yes.
And I think for them to merge is right now also difficult because they don't have the money to merge, right? Or they would just, and I think, it's just, the cash is just tight, right? So I think what could happen that bigger players will eventually buy new femtech companies or the younger ones, right? Mm. If they cannot invent themselves, because the bigger ones might just say, well, you know what they did, I can do as well. So why am I not doing myself or something, right? So we will see how that turns out. But I truly believe right now it's so unsettled, the market, that it's, there's just no clearness in it.
Yeah.
And I think in terms of bigger investments and stuff, I think that will really be in education, diagnosis, healthy living, precision medicine, and precision nutrition, like that you can really fine-tune it to this personalized healthcare. If they can, of course, show a business model which can generate income, because that's, I think, what will be super important. But I think the future should be a lot of more collaborations between femtech companies. Because, you know, if the one company has this, the one company has that, but together they could, you know, give a woman a bigger all-in-one solution. And I think this is where we are heading it, not so much in mergers, but more in partnerships and collaborations.
And I think as well, providing that community. So as from what I've gathered, the FemTech community is quite inclusive, I would say, but also very welcoming. So having the collaboration aspect of the different businesses coming together is quite exciting for me. I love collaboration. I think it's brilliant. It's why I have a podcast. But like having those that arena or that platform to have those discussions and that conversation around different tactics and different ways to do things, I think is also really great. And to have, I mean, I don't know how many mentors are out there in the FemTech world, but to have mentors and things like that to be able to collaborate with as well is really super important. Oh, I love this conversation. Last question. What advice would you give someone looking to break into the FemTech space?
I mean, I as a woman would say, hey, do it, right? It's definitely worth it. Especially if you are a mission-driven entrepreneur who really wants to solve an unmet issue, you know? I think that's when it's in your heart, you should definitely do it and know the why you want to do it and keep on, you know, believing in yourself. And of course, you also have to think about a business model and how you can ensure that you survive and can bring out great products and good services. And it's also super important to focus on the whole data privacy and regulatory element, which is also still a little bit, you know, difficult to figure out there because it's still a new, relatively new market. There's new regulations coming out every year, pretty much. So, and that will also be super essential for a successful and sustainable business.
Thank you so much. Can you just let everyone know where they can find you online? I will put it all in the show notes, but I always like to have you say where you are because it's quite
nice. I mean, I'm in Germany, and online you can find me on LinkedIn under my name, Nathalie Rechberg, and you can always email me as well, especially if you are a Femtech founder and want to collaborate, give me a message, and it's natalie.rechberg@vi-team.com. I think you might have to spell that into it out because my name is a little complicated in the end.
Don't worry. And you're on Instagram at...
Oh, yes. I'm on Instagram, but I actually don't really use it. I'm always... I have to use it more. But I am with also natalie.rechberg on Instagram. Yes.
Fantastic. And I will link the Tina and the Daisy Instagram accounts as well, so you can all go and purchase if they have not already done so. Natalie, thank you so much for being with me today. It has been a fantastic conversation.
Oh, thank you so much. Thank you.
Thanks. See you later.
Bye.